Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for September 17th, 2023. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and we are here to break down the big shows in pro wrestling and preview the ones that are upcoming. So glad you could join us here, whether you're listening live on PWTorchDailyCast.com or a few days later, maybe, on PWTorch.com. Happy to have you along with us. We're going to focus on Impact Wrestling today. Victory Road was last Friday. That was an important show. And Impact 1000, night one, was this past Thursday night on Access TV. We'll also talk a little bit about NXT No Mercy, which is coming up next Saturday night. And we'll touch on AEW Grand Slam, one of their biggest dynamites of the year, which is coming up this Wednesday. And to break it all down with me, I welcome aboard my very own Impact specialist, Darren Lilly, PWTorch.com contributor. Darren, happy to have you here once again talking Impact with me.
Well, thanks for having me, Greg. I appreciate being here, and I'm looking forward to talking a little Impact tonight.
Absolutely, as am I. And if you're listening live and you want to talk a little Impact with us, you can get on the phone lines. 515-605-9345 is the number to call. You can press 1 to show up in the queue to talk. Also, you can email us, wnialivecast@gmail.com. We've got a couple emails that we'll get to later on in the show. So I wanted to start with Victory Road, Darren, which was not two nights ago Friday, but actually the previous Friday. Impact has had a lot of shows, and it's been very hard to catch up on because I know they had Emergence. I missed that one. I think they had another joint show with New Japan. I missed that one, but I caught Victory Road, and I caught Impact 1000 on Thursday. So let me just – I'll give the results of Victory Road. I'll ask you a few questions and let you kind of talk about anything else in addition that you think you want to talk about from that show. So we started with Lio Rush defeating Kushida to retain the X Division title. We had MK Ultra, which is the tag team name of Killer Kelly and Masha Slamovich, defeating Giselle Shaw and Savannah Evans to retain the Knockouts tag team titles. Crazy Steve defeated Black Taurus. Tommy Dreamer defeated Kenny King to win the Digital Media Championship in a title versus career match. Jordan Grace defeated Deonna Purrazzo in Grace's return to the company. PCO defeated Bully Ray in an Anything Goes match. The Rascals defeated the Motor City Machine Guns to win the tag titles. Trinity defeated Alicia Edwards to retain the Knockouts title. And Josh Alexander defeating Steve Macklin in the main event. So it's been a while since we've talked, so I wanted to get your thoughts on some Impact-related storylines, character changes that have taken place since we last had you on the show, Darren. And I want to start with the third match, Crazy Steve over Black Taurus. Normally, not a match we would stop and spend a lot of time about, but Crazy Steve has taken on a new persona, or maybe not a new persona, but a more extreme version of the persona that he had been portraying in Impact Wrestling. He did these sit-down interviews with Tom Hannifin on Impact TV that really delved into his history and just really went to some dark places. And so he defeats Black Taurus, which is a former partner of his, on the Victory Road show, defeating very quickly. But I wanted to get your thoughts on this Crazy Steve character. I think my first impression is anytime you take someone who some people could argue may have been underdeveloped as a character or underutilized as a performer, and you give them more depth and you give them a push, that's a net victory. It's at least allowing them the chance to shine or fail. And then you could say, well, at least we tried. I guess my more pointed question to you is, what's your comfort level with this character on Impact? You know, Impact has a variety show. As much as WWE talks about being a variety show, I think Impact truly is. You've got you know, something for everybody. You've got the comedy with Santino and Dango and Joe Hendry. You've got the Undead Realm stuff with Rosemary and the supernatural stuff. You had a little bit of the dark stuff with Eric Young and his group and Cody Deaner. I think this is a little even darker than that was. So how do you see that fitting on the show, and what do you think of the character change overall?
I think it's working to perfection so far. As you point out, sometimes they do have, like, a dark story arc. It's kind of a variety, as you pointed out, some lightheartedness, and this is certainly not that. It is very dark, touched on, you know, some issues of abuse and illnesses and that kind of thing. And I could see maybe the storylines playing out that way. He keeps going for people's eyes because he's legally blind himself. So they keep touching on that. But this goes back to what Impact does very well. They will take someone who's been underutilized, not only in their own federation, but in other federations, like, for example, Steve Maclin. They take somebody who's kind of under the radar, and they will get the most out of them. And Steve's been around a while, and this is the best version I've seen of him. They're really going all in. When they do the promos, they have, like, really dark music, and they edit, you know, really looks spooky. And the promos that he did one, I think it was, like, the week before Impact 1000. I was very impressed with the production work on that. They're going all in with the character, and it seems like he's going to get a little bit of a push ahead of, you know, one of the briefcases at Impact 1000, which we may touch on also. But they're getting the most out of him, and I know that they're kind of scaling back on talent from what I understand, because they are going through some production upgrades. So they've got to go with people that they are going, that's going to be down on apparently the pared down roster. So this is somebody that's going to be there, and they're going all in on them from what I can see.
What's the ceiling for this character? Is it X Division Championship? Is it higher than that, do you think?
I think it's higher. If the fans seem to be on board for this journey, so if they're accepting of it, and he seems to be coming through. I mean, what you see of him in the ring is pretty much what we're going to get, because we've seen him for several years. And I mean, he's fine. You know, it's passable. Maybe he'll step up a bit now that he'll have more ring time. But I think he has a, you know, the character development is going very well. I could see them eventually moving him into maybe some world title matches, perhaps. I think he could go beyond the X Division title.
Yeah, we've seen some challengers for the world title on the special events that Impact does on Impact Plus, and, you know, they're not always the upper echelon of Impact talent in terms of the push. So I think if Crazy Steve can really garner some interest with this character and get a little buzz going, perhaps even, I could definitely see him being a challenger of the month, so to speak, for the Impact title. The next match I wanted to talk about was the next match on the show, Tommy Dreamer defeating Kenny King. So Dreamer, the new digital media champion, which is somewhat ironic, I think, for someone of Tommy Dreamer's age to be digital media champion, which is kind of like ironic, I suppose. Dreamer was all full funk tribute. He had the Terry Funk red and white striped pants on for this match. He teared up several times in the TV leading up to this promo. So it was all you can ask for out of Tommy Dreamer. It was giving a tribute to a fallen wrestler and crying in promos before this. So, like, you got the full Tommy Dreamer experience with this. Speaking of a Terry Funk tribute, I guess you could say putting his career on the line in this match is a roundabout way to tribute Terry Funk, the man who has had more retirements than any other wrestler in wrestling history. Dreamer as digital media champion. I mean, you know, Dreamer is not a guy who's getting a significant push in Impact, but he is getting a lot of TV time. Do you believe his name value still outweighs how his wrestling has slowed down in the ring?
I think he still has some value. When he had the feud earlier this year with Bully Ray, I was really not a fan of that, devoting so much airtime to them having the feud. And I kind of dreaded this match as well, but it was one of the two matches I didn't have high expectations for that really came through, and I was entertained. This match really surprised me. Tommy stepped it up, and of course there were some emotional elements to it as well. And I really enjoyed the match as it turned out. I thought Kenny King was doing very well playing into the whole digital media thing, and I hated to see him lose it. But, you know, Dreamer being champion, I don't expect it to be long-term. But it was a feel-good story, and it paid off in front of the home crowd for him. So it was a good story and a feel-good match, crowd-pleasing.
Yeah, and you would expect Tommy Dreamer, he mentioned on Impact 1000 that he was looking to defend the title anywhere, which sort of signaled to me that he was possibly going to defend it on some independent shows somewhere along the way. So that could bring the Impact brand some, you know, get their name out there. And, you know, that could be a net positive for Impact if he's able to do that as well. The other match I really wanted to touch on here during this show was Jordynne Grace defeating Deonna Purrazzo. Grace had exited the company. Her contract had expired several months ago. She is someone to me, Darren, that I expected to be a pretty in-demand free agent. You know, she showed an impact. She was a valuable piece of the Knockouts division, one of the better in-ring competitors in Impact. She had really completely transformed her body and her physique. And so I was surprised that we didn't even hear any rumors of negotiations with WWE or AEW. WWE, I know, is on this kind of top secret probation. They're not hiring people, but it might be a rule, but it might not be. You know, they were in that holding pattern while they were waiting for the merger with Endeavor to go through. So maybe it was just bad timing on her part. But you know, and AEW, they don't give a lot of TV time to the women, so they're not really in a position to add a lot more women to the roster. So I guess when you look at it that way, maybe the options just weren't as plentiful as one would have thought for Jordynne Grace. But are you surprised to see her back in Impact and not with either WWE or AEW, given that her contract had expired and it seemed like she was going to move on?
I was very much surprised because I like you, thought that she would be very sought after, and perhaps she was, and we just didn't hear about it. But yes, I did not hear one thing about, you know, any kind of negotiating or anything, and was surprised at Victory when they teased that she was coming back at Victory Road. I know that, you know, she has some other options. I think she has a very successful subscription website. So maybe the schedule just fit her better. Maybe it was some other factors that came into play, perhaps. But she'll always be a good fit in Impact, the Knockouts division, very popular. She had a run with the digital media title and, you know, wrestled some men and stuff. So she'll be fine there, and she seems satisfied. But I thought that we might see her on a bigger national stage where I thought she would have done very well. So, yeah, I absolutely surprised, but I mean, it's good for Impact, and I'm sure she seems happy.
Yeah, I mean, she does have the OnlyFans site, which I know was a problem that led to Mandy Rose be released by WWE, so I'm not sure if Grace's content is as risque as Mandy Rose's was. But, you know, you have to wonder if that was maybe part of the – if she even negotiated with WWE, if they would ask her to not have that. And as you said, I'm sure it makes her a pretty good coin. So that may have been a sticking point for her. That's really all I had about Victory Road. Is there any other matches or anything else that you want to touch on Victory Road before we go to our first call?
Probably just the only other thing was that the Trinity Alicia Edwards match was the other match that I didn't have high expectations for, and really I was very entertained by. They had a lot of outside interference, of course, and everything, but I thought Alicia came through. She was, you know, not the strongest challenger, but she did enough during promos and during this match, and it turned out to be a really fun match. So, yeah, I thought that one turned out well.
All right, before we start talking about Impact 1000, let's go to the phones. Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland is on the line. Ryan, welcome back to Wrestling Night in America. What's your first question for us tonight?
First question is on rumor Jade possibly coming to WWE. I know it's just a rumor, but if you were to go there, do you think her first opponent would be if you were booking that?
Yeah, the rumors are far enough down the road, Darren, that I've seen reports today that she's expected to even start at the Performance Center next week. So, you know, I don't think she spends a lot of time in NXT, if at all. I think she's just got that main roster pop to her. I don't know, man. I'm tempted to say throw her right in there with Rhea. Because, I mean, you know, when you look at potential challengers, you know, Becky Lynch was top of my list in terms of who I think would face Rhea Ripley next. And Becky's now NXT Women's Champion, so she's taken a detour. Rhea needs a strong challenger. She's already, you know, put away Raquel Rodriguez. You know, Jade is not as smooth and able in the ring as Rhea Ripley is, so you definitely run the risk of putting her on a big stage immediately and having those deficiencies show. But, you know, I don't know. I don't see her. Do you see her in NXT even, or do you think she jumps right to the main roster?
I don't really see her going to NXT. I could see why they would want to do it, maybe, you know, just to give her a little, you know, condition her to how WWE works or whatever. But, and she could probably use a little bit more, you know, seasoning or whatever. But they will probably, she's a big name signing, you know, to show that we took a big name from AEW. They'll probably put her right on the main roster. And I would kind of do her like they did when Cody came over, put her against a top tier person that's not necessarily the champion, so that you could still do the title hunt thing later. So I would probably put her against Charlotte Flair. And wow. Charlotte can carry her, and it's not necessarily a title situation, and it's still a big marquee match against a big name. And either one of them could win or lose or whatever, because Charlotte can afford a loss, and she's not really involved in anything, you know, that's just pressing right now. So that's the direction I would go.
Yeah, I guess if you were put her in there right with the champion, I mean, there's nowhere to go from down, but down from there. And we don't know, you know, we don't know how WWE views Cargill in terms of, do they see her as like a star that they need to take advantage of right away by putting her in a major title match? Or do they think that, you know, her in-ring is just not there yet and she needs to work with the Natalias of the world or Charlotte Flairs of the world or Baileys of the world to really get used to working WWE style first? Because I agree, I don't think she goes to NXT. I mean, can you imagine her in there with Roxanne Perez? Like, it's just like, it's, I mean, I hate to use this, but it's like a woman and girls. I mean, that's just kind of how I see the difference between those two. I mean, just in presentation alone, she circles them, or runs circles around them. So yeah, I think it all depends on how WWE views the in-ring portion. And, you know, if that's not a concern, I could see them putting her right into the fire immediately. But if they think that she's got to work on the in-ring portion, then I could see her, you know, starting with, like I said, a Natalia or a Bailey or somebody like that. Ryan, back to you for your second question for us.
Second question is an AEW question for you with what happened last night on Collision. Britt Baker lost in her, I guess she is a graduate of State College for undergrad. And you could tell a lot of the fans, just by looking at their facial reaction, were very disappointed. And my question is, do you think that's a bad idea to have a top face lose a championship match in the main event, considering I've gone to some State College, I didn't go to that State College show before, but I know WWE really struggles to draw there. Do you think that was a good idea for them to throw, make that, you know, decision based on that the State College normally has a tough time drawing a crowd anyway, well, and if you pull something like that?
Well, you know, I don't know. It's not like Chicago where they go there multiple times a year, so I'm not really sure how concerned they are about drawing the next time. But I also think that AEW has been historically a lot better than WWE about not embarrassing talent in their hometown and having them win and having a good moment. Now, that doesn't mean you can do that all the time. And AEW shouldn't change its booking, hopefully long-term booking, based on, oh, we're in this town, that means this person's got to go over because it's their hometown. And even if that shuffles up, you know, the booking plans for months ahead of time. So I don't think you want to fall into that trap either, where you're changing plans simply based on putting someone over in their hometown. And again, I think AEW has been better about having wrestlers win in their hometown than WWE has over their histories. And I'm really not sure how concerned AEW is about drawing in-state college. It's not a pillar for them. It's not a frequent stop for them, at least frequent enough for them to worry that much about the decision. That's kind of how, you know, there's a couple different prongs to this, Darren. What did you think about the decision to have Britt Baker lose at Penn State University last night?
I'm generally against people losing in big matches in their hometown, but it wasn't like she got humiliated. She lost a very competitive match. So, I mean, that takes a little bit out of it. Still disappointing for the fans, I'm sure. But I think it's leading to – I have a feeling it's leading to something bigger. Maybe she gets involved in the whole MJF, Adam Cole angle somehow, and maybe stemming from this loss, maybe that will play into it perhaps. So maybe it's a bigger picture thing and for the story. But, yeah, usually I'm against it, but I think this was fine.
And I think, Darren, you hit on the important piece, which is she wasn't humiliated. I mean, she put up a good fight. Fans got to see her in a competitive match. She just lost, and that's it. And I don't think fans who are real fans should be swearing off a company simply because the person they like lost a match. You know, that's probably not a good way of thinking, and they're probably not a real fan to begin with. You know, there's a big difference between what WWE used to do to JR when they were in Oklahoma and what happened to Britt Baker last night. So, you know, I don't know how upset and how mad people are really going to be about this particular loss. Darren, I think I cut you off. Did you want to say anything else about it?
No, I was just going to add that I'd like that, you know, it's fine to have a big name lose like that, because it seems to me sometimes in AEW they don't put certain wrestlers against each other because they don't want to see someone take a pinfall loss. So, I mean, it's okay to have people, your big names, lose. It's fine. I mean, it's no harm done if everybody, you know, takes a loss here and there. So I'm glad that they kind of did that. To, you know, maybe we'll get some bigger matches coming out of that, because I just think that they avoid certain matchups. So we'll see.
Yeah. All right, Ryan, your third and final question for us tonight.
Final question is an Impact question. This would be on, I guess, Impact 1001. I saw that they had a dark match with Rhino and Tommy Dreamer beating Moose and Brian Myers. Is the reason why that's not to be on TV is because they didn't want Moose getting beat by Dreamer, like on national TV, or do you think there's another reason maybe why they didn't put that on the show?
I don't know how Impact usually operates their dark matches, Darren, or whether or not that's commonplace to have names like that. You know, because it's a dark match, it's kind of I kind of look at it as WWE house show rules, where the baby faces generally always go over. So because it's not being filmed for TV, but you have any insights on the specificities that Ryan's talking about?
Yeah, I did see that result, and the first thing that popped in my head was they would make it a digital exclusive on their website, because they usually take one match from each taping, and usually has marquee names in it, and they'll put it up on the website and say, this is this week's, you know, digital exclusive, and I bet that that's what it is, if I'm not, I wouldn't be surprised at all, because it fits the kind of pattern of how they've been doing it lately.
And Dreamer is digital media champion now, so I guess that would make sense.
Makes sense, yeah, right.
All right, Ryan, thanks for the phone call tonight.
Taking the questions.
Of course. And if you want to get online, 515-605-9345 is the number to call. Impact 1000 was Thursday night, Darren. I thought it was purposeful, and I thought it was perhaps even telling that Impact bookended the show with a long knockout segment and an X Division title segment. I don't think that was accidental. I think both of those Impact probably feels, and the Impact decision makers probably feel, that those are two of the cornerstones of that company historically. So what did you think of those segments, the first segment, the knockout segment, setting up the 10-woman tag that will happen next week on night two of the Impact 1000 celebration, and then the main event where Chris Sabin won the X Division Championship from Lio Rush?
Oh, the first segment with the knockouts, first of all, it was one of the longest segments, opening segments in Impact 1000 episode history, if I'm not mistaken. But it was really fun. I thought it was well done, and having the people come back from the past was cool. I was a big Beautiful People fan, and I wasn't sure how their entrance would be perceived with, 10 years later, times have changed, and it was, it turned out that it was fine, but it, the kind of bending over in the camera right there, it was, a little much and kind of strange to see in 2023, but, was fine. No one was harmed, I suppose, but it was very good, and the fans just ate it up, like with Kong coming out there, and nice touch having Raisha Saeed out there as well, so that was cool, and I liked that the current knockout also played into that as well. So just a really good overall segment. I think that's about as well done as could possibly be. Mickie James came back, so that was nice. Mm-hmm. And then the main event, the X Division match with Sabin against Lio Rush. I think they anticipated maybe this would get some added viewers this week, perhaps, and they wanted to do something to put their best foot forward, and they absolutely did it. Lio Rush is just tremendous. He has such confidence in the ring, and his speed and his moves are just absolutely tremendous. And then Chris Sabin, I mean, I think he's at the top of his game as well. I mean, he was matching Lio, move for move. He hasn't lost a step, and it's been, they said he debuted like 20 years ago or whatever, and just you couldn't ask for a better main event for this type of show. So if they did get some new viewers, I think that they were impressed with what they saw in the ring and with the entertainment value of that opening segment. But as you made an excellent point, a good way to book in the shows on the two divisions that make them kind of stand out from other leagues, perhaps.
The thing with the Beautiful People, like I was a fan. Like obviously they were a very important part. They got a lot of ratings for Impact at the time. But when you put them in the ring with some of the women of today, I thought it did feel like they felt like a relic of a past generation. And maybe that's a good thing, because maybe it shows how far we've advanced past that, that type of presentation of women and things like that. But it just felt like they felt a little out of place, I guess is the way I would say it. And for as much as I enjoyed what they did, and I thought they were very good at what they did, there definitely was, at least for me, a feeling of this was a relic of a previous generation.
Yeah, and that was fine because it was kind of nostalgia. But yeah, I mean,
right,
there's
right.
probably going
to
be.
If there was ever a place to do it, it would be here.
Right. It was exactly. So I didn't have a problem with that. And I guess it was supposed to stand out somewhat. So yeah, agreed.
Feast or Fired made its return on Impact 1000. We had Chris Bay, Crazy Steve, Yuya Uemura, and Moose as the Feast or Fired briefcase winners in a match that featured a lot of Impact talent, many wrestlers on the roster. So, and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know if they showed, I usually fast forward through the filler, so I'm not really sure if they showed the graphic for this match, but it's world title, X Division title, tag title, and Fired. Is that still the four?
Correct. I think that is correct, yes.
Okay. So, I got to have your predictions, Darren. Who gets the world title shot? Who gets the X Division title shot, the tag title shot? And who gets Fired? Because this is all going to be revealed next Thursday night on the second part of the Impact 1000 celebration.
All right, here's my prediction. Moose gets the world title shot. That'll be a big match for an upcoming TV episode, perhaps. Chris Bay will get the tag team title shot, so him and Ace Austin, ABC, can get a title rematch. Yuya gets a shot at the X Division title, and that will cause some strife with him and Joe Hendry. And then Crazy Steve get fired and he'll do something so dastardly that it will lead to him coming back in some aspect because someone wants revenge or something. So that's how I see that playing out.
I guess the only difference I would see is Yuya Uemura, because correct me if I'm wrong, but he is on loan from New Japan, correct?
True.
So I'm thinking if his excursion time has expired, he may end up being the fired one. And then, so I would then say I would agree with Moose and the world title. I would agree with Chris Bay and the tag title. And then I would say Crazy Steve for the X Division title.
That would make sense.
Okay. Glad we're on the same page there. Yeah. That was the first, actually, that was the first one that stuck out to me. Like, which one of these doesn't belong? Because when you think of, I mean, fired is obviously the one that stands out amongst the rest. So, like, who is most likely to leave even for a short time? And then I looked at Yuya and I thought, well, if he's on loan from New Japan, he may end up heading back if he gets quote unquote fired. So that was kind of my take on it. The Team 3D reunion. Against the Desi Hit Squad. And so I guess shows like this sort of take place in a different realm than the normal weekly show. And maybe you can get away with things like this on a nostalgia show where you bring acts back. But Bully Ray goes from the Friday before trying to murder PCO, and here he is as babyface member of Team 3D with Brother Devon. So help me square that, Darren. Help me, because it would be, I feel like that would be jarring for the audience.
Right. So I guess that segment was for people who might just be tuning in for Impact 1000, and for the regular viewers, they're like, I just want you to turn an eye here and ignore the certain things. But yeah, I think that was more for the new people that will be coming along. I did notice that as well. I was like, this is strange. And then, we're just always all of a sudden forgetting about battery acid and setting people on fire and whatnot.
Yeah.
One night.
I guess one night only. But, I kind of expected like at least the announcers to touch on it, or, you know, maybe him to, after the match, go back in some way to his, you know, previous, I guess, gimmick as a heel, but there wasn't. It was just like, yeah, hey, remember Team 3D? They're here now. And then it's like, oh. I mean, you wouldn't have even known if you were somebody watching this because it's Impact 1000 and you're not a regular weekly viewer, you would not have known that Bully Ray is a heel every other episode of the show. So I guess if you're one of those people that sampled it for this show and decide to stick around, it's going to be very strange for you to see Bully Ray as a heel in the future when he's back to his singles character. So yeah, I just wanted to point that out and see what you thought about that. And then we had Kazarian and Tracy Brooks defeating Eddie Edwards and Alicia Edwards. It was also announced Tracy Brooks would be going into the Impact Hall of Fame, which I think was a surprise for her, given her reaction afterward. This was really a culmination of a storyline that had been building for quite some time on Impact TV, and Kazarian bringing his wife, Tracy Brooks, in to face the husband and wife team of Eddie Edwards and Alicia Edwards. How do you think that played out?
This feud has been going on a long time. Some might argue a little too long, but this was the way to wrap it up. Another crowd pleaser. They did it textbook, you know, letting Tracy come in and get the pin, and then the surprise announcement was just very well done. And I certainly assumed she did not know, just based on her reaction, and having their son there was just such a nice touch. And that's just one of the special moments that you're supposed to have on a show of this type. Very well done segment, one of my favorite moments of the night. So yeah, a good way to recap that, to end that feud, and please let that be the end of the feud. So yeah.
So night two of the Impact 1000 celebration takes place next Thursday night. We'll get the reveal for the Feast or Fired briefcases. Josh Alexander takes on Trey Miguel Ultimate X match as well. We'll have the 10 knockout tag match that was set forth in the opener. We have Eric Young versus Kenny King and Dirty Dango versus Jake Something as the match is announced. We had a couple other cameos on the show. Shark Boy was there. We had James Storm and Chris Harris were there. So a few nice cameos. So overall, I know, you know, I haven't looked at spoilers for Night 2. Just having seen Night 1 and the lineup for Night 2, was this a Impact 1000 celebration worthy of fans tuning in and perhaps, you know, fans who are lapsed Impact fans tuning in to see what the product is all about now and checking out some stars of yesteryear?
Oh, most definitely. Yeah, it was a good balance of, you know, the nods to the past, but also saying, hey, we got a, you know, good thing going on with the current roster that we have, so take a look at these guys as well. So, yeah, it was a good mix for if somebody was new. I think this show would hook them, so it was very effective, and it did live up to the hype of, because they've been promoting this for several weeks. Had all the good elements, nostalgia and you know, good in-ring action and nice video packages and promoting matches for the future, like Bound for Glory and that type of thing. So yeah, just a definite home run all around.
It's always a delicate balance on a show like this because you want to present the nostalgia that people are tuning in for, but you also want to provide a hook for perhaps those viewers, those nostalgic viewers, to tune in every week. And so you have to strike that balance between presenting that nostalgia while also, you know, not completely abandoning the storylines and everything that you're doing current day too. So I think Impact did a pretty nice job with that. We'll talk some No Mercy and we'll talk some AEW Grand Slam as well. Let's go to our first email question of the night. It goes to Azan from St. Louis. He says, hello, Greg and Darren. I hope you both have a great week. Number one, what are your guys' opinions on Impact's booking of PCO? I feel he could be have a world champion run in the short term, maybe like 2 weeks. And who should face Will Ospreay at Bound for Glory? So, for you know, I think PCO is an acquired taste. I don't see him as a real world title even contender. I think he's part of that, and I talked about it earlier, that sort of supernatural aspect of Impact Wrestling that I don't know mixes well with the main event scene of what Impact is trying to do. So I don't really see him as a world title contender, let alone a champion, even for a short term. Darren, your thoughts on that and who faces Will Ospreay at Bound for Glory?
Yeah, PCO, how he's being used right now is, you know, you have him in these feuds that will end with some kind of weapons match or whatever, and he's fine at that, and the crowds are really taking to him. But as a world title contender, I don't think necessarily for what they're doing with the people that they have on top, I don't think it's the best fit to go in that direction. But as far as Will Ospreay, Leo Rush was the first name that popped up to me, and I think that would be an interesting matchup. I'm not sure if they've wrestled in New Japan or anything, but could be a fresh matchup, at least for Impact, and something I would certainly want to see.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, there's no shortage of wrestlers in Impact who would make a good opponent for Will Ospreay. I think, you know, there are a lot of different, you know, Josh Alexander, you could do any of the Motor City Machine Guns, you could do, you know, the list is long. So it's going to be really interesting to see who is chosen for that role. Second question from Azan. What are your thoughts on Tony Khan putting together Hook and Orange Cassidy this week? Maybe it could be a weird mentor role for OC like AEW is doing with Nick Wayne and Darby Allin. So, yeah, I think that's interesting. You know, it plays to the humor of Orange Cassidy. Both men are men of few words, I guess. So you could see where there would be a partnership developing. Orange Cassidy needs to move on to something else because he lost the championship to John Moxley at All Out in the main event, the international championship. So I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm kind of waiting to see where it goes. I don't know if it's going to develop into a tag team or what it is, but so far their segments have been entertaining, and that's what's important.
Yeah, I think it's just going to be a short-term thing. They seem to like to put Hook in these odd tag teams, like with Danhausen and Jungle Boy, and this kind of fits the pattern, putting them with Orange Cassidy, which is entertaining, but I give it, you know, just a couple weeks, couple months or something before they both move on to something else and before Hook has another challenger and Orange Cassidy goes on to another program. I think that coming out of his title reign, and Orange Cassidy has been elevated and can face one of the bigger names. And I think this is just a little downtime between feuds, and this is a good use of them. So, yeah, I don't expect anything long-term, but, yeah, I think it's fun.
And question number three, as NXT No Mercy approaches in 2 weeks, will the main roster take center stage in NXT in the fall and winter to build ratings for TV negotiations? Mustafa Ali's contributions to NXT have been outstanding. So whatever the reason is, the main roster talent moving to NXT has undoubtedly helped ratings, from Dominic Mysterio to Becky Lynch. You saw the overrun of Becky Lynch's match with Tiffany Stratton drawing over 1 million viewers, which for NXT is crazy to think about. And NXT ratings overall have been really strong since they've started using main roster talent. You know, I don't know if it's a philosophical direction creatively to use more main roster talent, maybe to help out the NXT talent, or if it's strictly a business decision to up the price of NXT in the negotiations they're currently having. Whatever the reason, Darren, it seems to be working. So, and it seems to be NXT is an entertaining product right now. And so, you know, again, I go back to what I said about Hook and Orange Cassidy. If it's entertaining to the viewer, that's the main thing. And so NXT, by and large, has been entertaining. So whatever reason they're infusing NXT with more main roster talent these days, it's a good thing overall because it has made the shows more entertaining.
Yeah, I don't see any reason that they would stop doing it. It's not like they've burned out the concept just yet. I mean, I would bet that the way they've been doing it, they would probably wrap up Dominic's run here maybe in a little bit, just so it doesn't get old, and then bring in the next person, and they'll have like a little run, maybe 6 weeks or a couple months or something like that. And, you know, they have guys that seem that they're there permanently, like Mustafa Ali, you know, who is there week in, week out, and then they'll have guys that stop in. I don't expect Becky will be here, you know, long term by any means, but the way they're doing it keeps it fresh, and I don't see any reason they would stop. It seems to be a successful formula.
Yeah. Azan is right. I think I said at the beginning of the show that No Mercy is next weekend. It's actually 2 weeks away. So we did talk a little bit about NXT with Nate Lindberg last week on Wrestling Night in America. Nate is a NXT specialist here at the Torch. So just a couple of matches that were added since then. I won't, you know, belabor the point of previewing the stuff that we already talked about last week. But Bron Breakker versus Baron Corbin. They had a very interesting segment on NXT TV this past week. Baron Corbin almost babyface-ish, which is just so hard to picture in the mind's eye. But interesting nonetheless to have Bron Breakker go into a feud with Baron Corbin, it appears.
Yeah, that's kind of an odd direction, but I mean, it seems to be working. I could see Baron Corbin maybe doing a face turn. As far as like a prediction, I would see Baron winning because he seems like he's going to be in NXT for a while, and I think it's time to bring Bron Breakker on up to the main roster. So, and now is as good a time as any. So, this could be the impetus for that.
And Carmelo Hayes will face Ilya Dragunov for the NXT title. I know it was between Wesley and Ilya Dragunov last week when we talked with Nate. Not a surprise. I think I projected Dragunov to win. You know, Dragunov is one of those guys, though, that he has great matches. His style is so different from a lot of other people on the NXT roster. but I just don't see him ever getting the NXT title. And it's like, I can't really explain why, but I just don't see him as NXT champion. Do you figure that his chances are a little better than I give him against Carmelo Hayes here?
I think so. I mean, he's been on such a run of having good matches, you know, yeah, bringing out the best in his opponents. It would be a good move. I don't know. You might have a point that they don't necessarily see him that way, but I would give it a shot and then let him have these matches against different opponents from heels and faces week in and week out. And, you know, you do that for a little bit and you have a draw on your hands. So I would go that direction. I'd make the switch. And, you know, Carmelo Hayes is outstanding as well. He's another guy that's ready for the main roster. I don't see why we need to keep dragging this out. Just bring the guy up finally. And there's room for him to see what happens on the main roster.
There have been guys throughout history in not just WWE but other wrestling companies who have been treated as big stars, like Ilya Dragunov is, and who's gotten title matches like Ilya Dragunov has gotten or will get, but the company has never really seen them as someone to actually put the title on. And I guess that's just kind of how I would love to see Dragunov as champion. I think that would work really well. I think, you know, his in-ring work, it certainly merits that, and his character work has improved immensely, and he fits, I think, a lot of what NXT wants to do, but there's just something, and I can't explain it. So I don't know, maybe I'll be proven wrong, and I'll be happy to be proven wrong if he beats Carmelo Hayes at No Mercy, because I think that would give also a little something different to the top of the card there in NXT as well. So let's go to our next phone call. DJ from Miami is on the line. DJ, welcome to Wrestling Night in America. What's your first question for us tonight?
Hi, guys. I'm going to talk about the first thing about, I guess, The Rock and Austin. I feel bad for Austin. You know, first title off Ray, and now this. It's like he could have did with anybody else. I feel like Austin just, I don't know what he did. What's wrong? I don't.
Are you talking about Austin Theory? When you said Rock and Austin, Steve Austin.
You know, remember what he said. He is the only Austin. Remember, that's what he said.
Or something like that?
He did say that, so I'm just going off what he said.
Okay. Fair enough.
I don't know. It's so weird to me. It's just like, he could have had anybody else, but I feel like Austin's getting thrown under the bus. I understand he did the thing with Cena. I get it, but it's just like LA Knight would have been great. I don't know. What do you really guys think at the end of the day? I understand. And also, before I say anything, The Rock did seem a little clunky there, so, and he did not stumble his words a little, so I don't know about The Rock. But I just feel like, what do you feel like at the end of the day with Austin? I feel like he is a great talker. He looks good, and I don't know what they're trying to do. It's not like they're going to wrestle anything. I just don't know why they took the belt from him and threw him under the bus like this. I don't get it.
Well, I mean, they threw him under the bus to The Rock. So, I mean, that's a pretty big compliment. So
I feel like I'm scared they're going to keep on saying, you know, A, every time he comes out. That's what I'm scared of, and it's going to throw him under the bus.
Well, it's better than no reaction at all, right? Which is what you risk if you don't have him, you know, with The Rock. Look, The Rock does not do TV very often. And WWE is going to be very selective about who they use in a segment with The Rock. And the fact that Austin Theory was in that segment, even though he got beat down, is a feather in the cap and a thumbs up from WWE to Austin Theory. You know, realistically, how was that segment going to end? It wasn't going to be Austin Theory, like, laying out The Rock and, like, standing over him. That was never going to happen. So having him beat down by The Rock, I don't think is anything to be too concerned about. Right, Darren?
Oh, I wholeheartedly agree. When I saw the segment, the first thing that popped in my head was, like, wow, they have lots of confidence in Austin Theory to have him go in there with Pat McAfee and The Rock, knowing that, you know, millions of people are going to see this segment. They must have a lot of confidence in this guy to carry a whole segment like that. So, yeah, I see nothing but positives from it. And sure, you know, and he got laid out at the end, but that's not a big deal whatsoever. He got to go toe-to-toe with both of those guys, and I see nothing but positives. I'm sure he was very happy
And I will also point out that at this point, it does seem like WWE is higher on Austin Theory than the general wrestling fan populace, at least online.
Yeah.
I think there's you know, the idea that Grayson Waller has kind of lapped Austin Theory in terms of character presentation, in-ring work, just being much more interesting than Austin Theory. So if you're an Austin Theory fan, the fact that WWE put him in this position tells you that they are higher on Austin Theory than I think a lot of fans are at this point. So that's kind of where I am with that, DJ. Your second question for us tonight.
Yeah, real fast. I feel like also maybe if you had that belt or something, if you had more a little confidence or something, it would have been a little better. If you would have did have the belt, though, it sucks they took that away from him. But and my second thing is the LA Knight thing. That would have been great if LA Knight would, and The Rock would have been, did it, you know. But my second thing is that going into LA Knight, I feel like everybody keeps on saying over and over he's going to win the Royal Rumble. And it doesn't look like they're saying online that Roman will even be at the Rumble. So it's like, at the end of the day, it'd be great if he did win the Rumble because Cody won last year. So Cody's trying to find his, you know, story. But do you feel like he deserves it, or do you feel like Austin deserves it at the end of the day?
Well, I don't. I'm in the Austin Theory doubters camp, so I'm not ready to say that he should win the Royal Rumble. I'm not really. I like LA Knight, but I don't see him as a world champion, and even challenging, like, you know, winning the Royal Rumble positions you for challenging for the championship at WrestleMania. I just don't know if I'm there yet with him. I don't know who else, you know. I think the conversation then turns to, okay, if not LA Knight, then who wins the Rumble? Do you look at Cody Rhodes? Does he win it 2 years in a row? Does he then rematch with Roman Reigns at WrestleMania where he finally wins? Does Jey Uso win the Royal Rumble and challenge Roman Reigns at WrestleMania, which, you know, now that they're on separate brands, conceivably that's the only way that Jey Uso can try to get his revenge is by winning the Rumble and choosing to face Roman Reigns. So there are not a lot of options as we sit here on September 17th, Darren, in terms of legitimate contenders to win the Royal Rumble. So I think that's why you're seeing LA Knight's name being thrown out there, even though I'm not really sure I'm buying him that high up on the card.
Right. Yeah, I don't see LA Knight winning Royal Rumble. Just like, you know, people were saying, oh, he should have won Money in the Bank. But, you know, that just means he's going to lose the world title match, because I don't think they have plans for him either. This is the guy that's going to beat Roman Reigns, or, you know, even maybe not Seth Rollins for that matter. So, yeah, I don't see him. It's got to be Cody, maybe Jey Uso, but I think we're headed towards Cody taking it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's still a lot of time. I know that WWE has reportedly booked long-term, so I would assume that if they had a Royal Rumble winner in mind that we're not talking about, that we would see signs that they are starting to build that person to the point where they kind of their climax in terms of a performance is at the Royal Rumble. But, you know, maybe that's not even till November at Survivor Series when the road to WrestleMania officially begins. DJ, your third and final question for us tonight.
I did, on a couple of sites, though, they're saying that he was really high up on the card, so maybe it'll be CM Punk. I don't know. My final opinion,
that's a whole other deal.
My last thing is Jane Cargill. I know she's coming to WWE. I heard online. I'm not sure if that's true or not, but I feel like she's so green. Don't you think she should take a year off or something? I know unless she's going to go to NXT for 3 years or more. I don't know. What do you guys really think of the day? I don't want to see her and Brandy go at it again. Because that was kind of funny.
Well, we did talk about Jade a little earlier on the show with Ryan, our first caller. Again, I think it all depends on WWE's view of her. You know, if they think that her wrestling is so far behind main roster expectations, then maybe she does go to NXT, and maybe she does, you know, plow through things very quickly. You know, with the use of main roster talent on NXT that we've been talking about, I guess it wouldn't be shocking to see Jade Cargill there, because if they're willing to use Becky Lynch there, who's the biggest star of the women, then, I mean, maybe they shouldn't worry about how Jade Cargill appears by going to NXT. But I think, you know...
She's going to need a manager. She can talk.
Maybe. I just don't... Understand
NXT for at least a year and let her, you know, let her clean up on her, you know, everything.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think that's going to happen. I think she's too big of a star to keep in NXT for that long.
I think she's too...
Well, she's on a completely different star level than Bron Breakker. I'm sorry to tell you. Darren, I mean, her presence is... I mean, she's... The package is main roster ready. It's just... How does WWE feel about her wrestling and where she lands and what her first storyline is going to be, I think, as we talked about earlier, is going to tell us a lot about how WWE feels about that.
Right. That's what it's going to come down to. And presumably with the amount of money that they're going to be paying her, they can't justify having her in NXT for a long period of time, you know, maybe a few weeks or a couple months or something. But I would imagine with what they're paying her, obviously I'm not privy to that, but yeah, she's got to be main roster fast tracked immediately, if not,
yeah,
you know, a few weeks.
That's a good point about the money thing too, because, you know, she's not coming in for NXT money. I'm quite sure. So, DJ, appreciate the phone call this week. Thanks for calling.
But just remember this. That's the problem. Look what happened at EAW. They pushed her, and look what she got the belt, and look what happened. That's what I'm saying. Like, if they
we're not saying she's going to get the belt immediately in WWE, just that she would start out on the main roster. That's a different thing.
Those big people. Come on. This is Vince.
All right. Thanks, DJ.
Thanks. We'll see you next week.
All right. Let's preview Grand Slam a little bit, since that's a big show for AEW coming up. We have MJF versus Samoa Joe for the AEW World Championship, Saraya versus Toni Storm for the AEW Women's World Championship, Chris Jericho versus Sammy Guevara, Claudio Castagnoli versus Eddie Kingston in a winner-take-all match for the ROH World Title and Strong Openweight Championship, and then Jon Moxley against Rey Fénix for the International Championship. Then on Rampage, which is night two of Grand Slam, we will see Christian Cage and Luchasaurus against Darby Allin and Sting, the Mogul Embassy against the Elite, and the Acclaimed against the Dark Order. You know, for as much criticism, and I think correct criticism, that AEW got about the build for All In and the build for All Out, and how difficult it was to properly build All Out because your focus was on All In and selling 80,000 tickets. I think this Grand Slam event has been built really well, specifically the Dynamite episode. I look at all those matches, and I think the build has been really well done. You know, Moxley versus Fénix, maybe not as much. They did that backstage segment this week to kind of build it. But Castagnoli versus Eddie Kingston has been brewing for a long time. Same with Jericho and Sammy, has been brewing for a while. They've gotten two long TV segments the last few weeks to build it up. Saraya and Toni Storm, I mean, Toni Storm's descent has been one of the highlights of AEW TV. And then, you know, MJF and his story with Samoa Joe, not a long-term thing, but I think, you know, people buy Samoa Joe as a legitimate challenger. So what do you think of the lineup, and specifically MJF versus Samoa Joe? We don't see MJF defend the title on TV very often, so this is going to be a big match.
Yeah, I think they've done well with this lineup. One of the, you know, weak points of AEW is sometimes they'll just throw a match out there with no build, and, you know, it'll end up being a good match, but you need some, you know, some hype for it. And I think they've done a good job with that. They've really done good with the Claudio against Eddie Kingston match. Saraya against Toni Storm has a good backstory leading up to it. And then the Chris Jericho-Sammy segment was excellent from last week and really made me want to see that match. And then, of course, on top is MJF against Samoa Joe. And they've done well rehabbing Samoa Joe. He's been on a tear with a bunch of different wins and everything. I'm looking forward to this one. They did a good job of the build, and I think it will deliver in the ring as well. I expect MJF to retain, I'm sure, but if they were to do the offset and have Samoa Joe, that wouldn't be the worst thing, because I think he's, you know, doing very well in there, and has a good presence and been dominating, and I wouldn't mind seeing him. You know, you can do a redemption story of MJF trying to get the title back or something like that. So there's some intrigue going into it.
Where do you think this storyline with Adam Cole and MJF ultimately ends up? You know, we've got a lot of moving parts to it. You know, you've got Mike Bennett and Matt Taven and Roddy Strong on the outside kind of, you know, breaking down as this storyline has progressed, Roddy breaking down more and more. How do you think this ultimately ends up? Is this Cole and MJF relationship a real thing, or does one guy turn on the other at some point?
I think they initially thought it would just go a few weeks, but fans kind of got into it. I think now they're going to capitalize on this MJF-Cole tag team and ride that out and see, you know, how much legs that it has. And down the line, eventually, I see Cole teaming up with the rest of the Kingdom and Britt Baker jumping on board as well. I was wondering if maybe that's why they took Maria out of the Kingdom, because they're going to put Britt Baker in that spot perhaps. And maybe they're headed towards that down the line. I don't think we're going to see it anytime soon, but I think that's where it will eventually go.
All right, well, let's go to our next email. It's from our friend John, and he has a lengthy series of questions focused on the bloodline to start out with. He says, "Hi, Greg and Darren. Hope you're both doing well. First topic, has the bloodline storyline worn out its welcome? This storyline was so well-crafted and performed exceptionally with only minor hiccups for close to 3 years. So, first of all, it is to be commended for that. But unfortunately, I think they may have long reached the point where the storyline feels like it's been running on fumes. As an analogy you might understand, it's kind of like when one of the show's creators left Seinfeld after the seventh season, and the show changed from one with layered jokes and respect for continuity and multidimensional characters with purpose to a more traditional sitcom with caricatures and more outlandish and absurd situations the characters find themselves in. It was still mostly good and also funny, especially season 8, but the approach had changed, and it felt like it lost its original purpose and started running out of unique ideas. Similar to this, I feel like the Bloodline storyline has lost its purpose, and it feels more than ever like they're winging it right now, and with some key people involved, maybe even being less involved creatively, and dare I say, less motivated. On air, they're still performing great, but I'm talking creatively. I mean, Roman Reigns being physically absent wasn't always too big an issue for me before when he'd miss a few weeks every month, as it made him seem more special. And the story focused on the other principal players, but I feel with the quality of writing going down in recent months, his extended absence has been more noticeable, and the storyline feels messy and unimportant right now, at least compared to the Judgment Day. I don't know if Roman's injured or if Bray Wyatt's then undisclosed illness and subsequent death changed his perspective on life, given that Reigns is a survivor himself and COVID can complicate things, and he wants to spend more time with family, or he just doesn't care about work like he used to because it didn't fulfill him anymore, so he isn't motivated to show up for the fans even a couple times a month right now. But this is the longest time I feel his absence has coincided with an extended lack of direction and urgency in this storyline. I'm confident in assuming he'll be back for the Saudi show. Of course he will be. However, I believe there's another PLE before then, so it's a long time away. Question, what do you make of Roman's recent absence on TV, and has that alone helped or hurt the storyline?" So couple things here that I want to note is, let me go back to last week's page here in my notes. So we've got Fastlane on October 7th. I would not expect Reigns for that. And then we have Crown Jewel, I believe it is, in early November before Survivor Series. You know, first of all, when I first started watching Seinfeld, it was probably season 8, because I was really young then, and I'm a huge Seinfeld fan. I've seen every episode multiple times thanks to syndication, so, you know, I know Larry David left the show, and it took on a different tone, but I still, the show that I fell in love with the post-Larry David years, so that was, you know, that's kind of how I remember it. Anyway, I sounded the warning bells in my SummerSlam pay-per-view roundtable that appeared in the Torch. And there were a lot of people who were still on board and still loved the finish and still were bloodline. So I think when you combine just that finish and what it's led to since then with Roman Reigns' absence, and yes, I do think – I'm not sure that, you know – Every storyline, especially one that goes this long, has its ebbs and flows, and we're maybe in a down cycle right now. But I do think there are some warning signs about the bloodline that maybe haven't appeared, at least for this kind of extended period. You'd get them a week here and there, but for this extended period, more so now than you've ever gotten in any period of the storyline. I think the concerns that John lays out are valid. That's my overarching point. Darren, what do you think about where the storyline is right now? And has Roman's absence, as John asks, helped or hurt the storyline?
I thought it had gotten a bit stagnant. How many times can you have them turning on each other and this guy comes
that was
back?
Yeah.
I mean, how many times can you do it? So they needed to take a break, and it was a good move to send Jay over to Raw and just kind of stop it and let them go off and do different things for a little bit. You can come back to it, you know, in January when the big money shows start, the Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, of course, and, you know, kind of recharge and get back going early next year. You might have some more creative ideas, that type of thing. I thought it was odd that Roman Reigns was not on that Royal Rumble poster, though. I mean, that's one of the big shows of the year, one of the big four.
Yeah.
And it was kind of glaring that he's not on that. I don't understand the reasoning. So apparently they're not going to start any kind of storyline progress. Why would you do that if the main character of the angle isn't there? So I think it was good to take a break because it was getting a little repetitive, but I bet they'll gear up in the new year. Maybe not necessarily Royal Rumble, but yeah, it was a good move to kind of let them go off on their own a little bit.
Yeah, I will say things can change, right? So between now and the Royal Rumble, he may appear on the show, but he's not going to be in the Rumble because he's champion. And if you've got Seth Rollins defending the title on the show, maybe you figure you don't need Roman Reigns defending his title on the show. The Rumble kind of sells itself, so you don't need Reigns as a drawing card necessarily either for that show. So
mm-hmm.
That may be WWE's thinking behind it. And, you know, as for the storyline, I always go back to what Paul Heyman said, I believe it was after SummerSlam, where he said the storyline was in the bottom of the third. And so you figure, okay, 3 years in, you're in the bottom of the third. There's 9 innings in a baseball game. So he's expecting this storyline to go for 9 years. I mean, that's kind of, you know, if you want to map it out that way, that's what he's saying. So, you know, I don't even expect Roman Reigns to be around in 9 years. So, I don't know, maybe they pass the storyline on to the Usos and somebody really does take Reigns' throne. But, you know, when you're seeing the bumps in the road that you're seeing right now and you think, boy, we're still so early in the storyline, according to Heyman, who, you know, to be fair, has quite a bit of say in this storyline. It's like, ooh, I'm not sure if that's a good thing.
My thoughts exactly.
All right, so next part of John's question, he says, Jimmy's motivations don't really fit with the rest of the story and feel too out of left field, and he's out of the bloodline and suddenly interested in coming back. Solo's story hasn't advanced a ton and feels like he especially needs Reigns there to tell the next chapter in his story and development. Heyman is still performing fantastically in small backstage segments and occasionally in the ring and is probably as good as ever, though. They could do Jimmy versus Cena and some tag matches with the Jimmy Solo versus Cena Styles for a few months, but it doesn't feel like a natural progression of the Bloodline storyline, more like a detour. The storyline feels like a show that has lost its steam, like a CW show that is strong until 3 or 4 seasons in, but continues for years after its prime, or the Fast and Furious franchise that continues churning out sequels at breakneck speed, even though the last truly great one was maybe Fast 5, but they remain popular enough with general audiences. Question. Do you think the Bloodline storyline would have been better off coming to an end this past WrestleMania with Cody defeating Roman and finishing his story? And what do you think about the storyline as it is currently and my assessment? The show that I actually thought of when John was listing that was The Walking Dead, which I was into for the first several seasons, and then you had cast members leave, and it kind of turned into something that it was appointment television for me only because I'm someone who, like, when I start a show, like, I'm really anal about it and I have to finish it. Even though
mm-hmm.
I didn't actually, I think the last half of the last season I didn't see because I moved and I kind of lost track of, you know, changing from cable to streaming, and so I kind of lost track of the show. So that's kind of how I would frame it as The Walking Dead. But, you know, to John's actual question, I don't think Cody Rhodes winning at WrestleMania would have necessarily ended the Bloodline storyline. I think you could have had Cody win, and this is what I argued, you know, in the spring. You could have had Cody win, which would have forced a different aspect, another chapter, I guess, or a sequel to the Bloodline storyline. It would still be the Bloodline storyline. It would still be Roman Reigns. It would still be the Usos. It would still be Solo Sikoa. It would just be a different version of it because now Roman isn't champion. So it's a very – things are a little different. How you view the parties within the storyline is different. So I don't think the storyline even would have come to an end if Cody had won. I just think it would have taken on a different look. And I think now that we're sitting here and we're discussing how bland things have gotten with this storyline, I go back to that and say, you know, would they be this bland if you would have had a significant detour the way you could have by having Roman Reigns lose and just kind of changing up how the storyline looked on its face?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would also question whether Jay should have won that world title at SummerSlam, because then you'd have a whole nother kind of a reset. Everyone would want to see how is Roman going to react from losing the title, and you could have Jay defending and building up a championship streak. But it just kind of felt flat to me with Jay just losing, and then now he's on Raw and kind of resetting. And they, you know, set up some storylines there, of course, but it might have been better with Jay just winning outright. That's the one that I question, as opposed to Cody winning at WrestleMania, which is also very valid as well, though.
Yeah. All right, to John's other topic, the WrestleMania 40 main event, he said, I saw this past Friday's SmackDown and The Rock's appearance and enjoyed the segment overall, but it got me to thinking about who Roman's opponent will be for WrestleMania. The segment on SmackDown was self-contained, and Rock performed his role well, and so did Pat McAfee and Austin Theory. So there isn't much to examine, but the writers and SAG strikes going on, I'm guessing this isn't the last time we see Rock on WWE programming in the coming months. Will he face Roman Reigns, or will it be Jay or Cody? Or will it be Austin Theory or Grayson Waller? The latter two may seem far-fetched, but they're both clearly talented, and it may depend on if The Rock is in a mindset of wanting to give back to the next generation or whether he wants the biggest match possible on WrestleMania. Personally, as I've said before, I would prefer Jay, although Cody would also be a great choice. But I could imagine WWE going with Rock because he's The Rock. However, I don't think WWE needs The Rock or has too much of an incentive to give into his demands compared to 10 years ago. Their business of late doesn't necessitate depending on names like The Rock. However, I could also envision a scenario where Reigns faces The Rock on night one and faces Jay or Cody on night two. That way, no one has to lose out, and it's another thing for Roman to brag about, being in the main event twice in 1 week. Personally, though, I hope Rock only gets involved with Roman if he adapts to the Bloodline story and it's not simply legend versus legend like Once in a Lifetime. Also, even though Rock is my favorite WWE superstar of all time, I hope if he does get involved with the Bloodline that he evolves beyond using his usual shtick slash greatest hits every appearance and truly immerses himself in the storyline and sells for everyone in the Bloodline. Otherwise, I think he brings the storyline down. Question, if put on the spot, how would you use Roman, Jay, Jimmy, Solo, Cody, and The Rock, assuming he'll be there at WrestleMania 40? So I would do Rock versus Roman. I would probably do Jay versus Jimmy. See, the thing too is you've got two nights. So you could do Roman versus Rock one night and Roman versus Cody the next night. You could do Roman versus Rock non-title, Roman versus Cody for the title if Cody wins the Rumble. You could do Jay versus Jimmy and Jay versus Roman. You know, you could do a number of different incarnations. The two-night thing makes it a lot more difficult to come up. I don't think Solo has a strong singles match. I think I don't think they see him in the same way they say CJ or even Jimmy, at least right now. You know, I think there's an argument to be made that Solo versus Roman down the line could be a big singles match, but given where we are in the storyline right now, I don't think he plays a big part in a singles match at WrestleMania. I will say that if you bring Roman back and he does something that's not associated with the Bloodline, I think that would be very weird. You know, I think there's an acknowledgement that The Rock and Roman are family. The whole storyline about Roman is his family. If you don't have – and I think it was a little weird even this week that Rock was on SmackDown and didn't really have much to do with, you know, even Jimmy. you know, I think it would be weird to have Rock on the show and not have something to do with Roman. And I agree with John. I think he needs to – I think the focus needs to be there for him, and I think he needs to really adapt to the story rather than have Roman adapt to Rock's shtick. The one thing that interested me was Rock, you know, this week doing the interview where he said, you know, he was locked down for WrestleMania this past year, and in so many words, creative was not to his liking. Which is weird because you would have thought it was Roman versus The Rock, and you would have thought that a story built around family and tradition, given The Rock's emphasis on family, would be right up his alley. So then maybe was the problem that Rock was losing. Like, you know, the further you dig into what he really meant by that, the more you think, he may not have liked the result that was presented to him. But nevertheless, it was another piece of evidence, I guess, in the whole discussion about Rock at WrestleMania. Will he or won't he? It seemed like he was going to be at last year's WrestleMania, and then he wasn't, and now we have the Rock side of things, at least in that interview. So, Darren, all of that said, I go back to John's question. If put on the spot, how would you use Roman, Jay, Jimmy, Solo, Cody, and the Rock at WrestleMania 40?
Well, I think the big money is in Rock against Roman Reigns. You could do the two-night thing and have Roman against Cody on another night, but if they decide Roman's only doing one match, you got to make that against The Rock. At that point, what do you do with Cody? What's big enough for him? I don't know if they'll have Damian Priest up and running by then, maybe. You can't have him against Seth again for the fourth or fifth time or whatever on a pay-per-view. I'll just call it the old name pay-per-view. So I'm kind of stuck for what you have for Cody if you don't do the two-night thing. It's just assuming that Rock is going against Roman, who's big enough to – I mean, is LA Knight going to be in ring, can he deliver a 20-minute main event? I don't necessarily think people want to see that. So they're kind of stuck. Yeah. And you might be stuck and have to do the two-night thing because I don't know what else you would have for Cody.
Yeah. Yeah, Cody is, you know, if The Rock's not there, it's easy for Cody. Like, it's Roman, I would say.
Sure.
But if The Rock is there, then it's like, you know, is it Jimmy Uso? Is it, you know, I don't know. Is it something with Jey Uso? Maybe a tag team of some sort. I don't know. That doesn't seem very big either, but I mean, one of the biggest matches on WrestleMania this year was a tag team match with Kevin and Sammy against the Usos. So I mean, they could make it work, but it's this is why they get paid the big bucks to think of this stuff, and we get paid we don't get paid much to just sit here and talk about it. Finally, John's question: when would you do LA Knight versus Roman Reigns? They've teased it happening, and LA Knight has said he wants championship gold, and it seems WWE wants to capitalize on his immense popularity. I'd save it for the Royal Rumble because it gives time for the fans to really want LA Knight to get the shot and builds momentum. It's also easier to do without having to do a title change, given that the Royal Rumble matches are traditionally the main event. You could also do a rare Roman match on SmackDown and give it away as a special treat and ratings grabber, and then maybe do a rematch at the Rumble. Or you could save it for WrestleMania itself if his popularity sustains itself for much longer and remains red hot until closer to that time. Question, when would you do the LA Knight-Roman Reigns title match, and would you at least consider a title change? Keep up the great work. Wow. I thought I liked LA Knight, man. I did. I thought I was an LA Knight fan. I wrote a column about it recently. You can check it out in the Torch or at Greg Parks Out Loud VIP audio show. But I guess there are people who like LA Knight a lot more than I do. my answer to the initial question, when would you do LA Knight versus Roman Reigns, is I wouldn't. But if you're going in with the idea that you're going to do LA Knight versus Roman Reigns, first of all, I do not at least consider a title change. And I would say, well, see, that's the thing, because if Reigns is going to be very select in his dates. So you've got to have his opponents. They've got to be big-name opponents. You don't want to waste a throwaway opponent on Roman Reigns. And I kind of feel like that's what LA Knight would be. So, you know, you would say, okay, I would have LA Knight against Roman Reigns at one of the lesser pay-per-views. But then the response there would be, well, Roman Reigns isn't doing the lesser pay-per-views, especially if he's not even doing the Royal Rumble.
Right.
So, yeah, I would be fine with LA Knight versus Reigns at the Rumble. You know, but again, we don't know if Reigns is even doing that show. But I would be do a one and done. I don't think it has to be an extended story. I don't think it has to be a multi-month title chase. LA Knight says he wants championship gold. That could just as easily be the United States title. It does not have to be the world title that Roman Reigns has held for 3 years. I don't see LA Knight as that guy to knock him off after that kind of title reign that Roman Reigns has had. Am I wrong, Darren? Is there room for me to be wrong? Talk me out of it.
No. If we're having, we have to have Roman Reigns against LA Knight, I would do it at SummerSlam because a little bit of the pressure is off there and you could have some other several main events building up to support that match as well, because I don't see LA Knight winning. So, and you want to save him having that world title match because afterwards it's going to, I don't want to say it's downhill because not necessarily, but that's the peak of it, is him getting a world title match that he's not going to win. I just don't see, I don't think they see him that way. So
I think the concern, Darren, with waiting that long is you've got lightning in a bottle with LA Knight and you don't know how long it's going to last. You don't know when fans are going to turn to the next big attraction. So if you want to pull the trigger on an LA Knight Roman Reigns title match, I think you got to do it sooner rather than later.
That is a very good point. I just think Royal Rumble would be too soon, though. But that's an excellent point. I don't see his popularity necessarily going down. But then you'd hope.
Yeah.
They're trying to build him, I guess. They said they were negotiating for a long-term contract, so you can kind of take the time with it, I suppose. I don't think they've come to terms just yet from what I understand, but
yeah,
I would save it. But you bring up an excellent point about let's get it done now while he's at his possible peak.
Right. That's my thinking anyway. All right, Darren, appreciate you joining me here on Wrestling Night in America once again. Before you go, tell people where they can follow you on social media and what you do for The Torch.
For The Torch, I do the Impact Wrestling Live Results. You can catch those every Thursday. And I also do an Impact Wrestling podcast with John Laszlo on the VIP side of The Torch. And that drops usually every Tuesday or Wednesday, depending. And you can find me on Instagram and Threads at DKLSTL. And thanks for having me today.
Of course. Thanks for joining me. And going to have you on again soon to talk Impact, I promise you.
Sounds great.
All right. Thank you, Darren Lilly, PWTorch.com contributor. And thank you all for joining us. We'll be back next Sunday to, again, talk about the big shows in pro wrestling. We'll look back at Grand Slam. We'll preview whatever other matches are added to the No Mercy card and talk about all of that and more, because if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.